ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey everybody, I'm Kim Holderness.
And I'm Ben Holderness. Thank you for hitting play, download, whatever you press to start the Holderness Family Podcast. We're so honored that you decided to join us for this half hour to 45 minutes, depending on the edit length.
Yes, and depending about how long Ben wants to talk sports with our guest.
Oh, that's going to be trouble, right?
Yes.
Because he was my sports center. Okay. So let's just start with this. We normally, on Tuesday, we do podcasts about our lives, and we leave the amazing race talk to Thursdays. Because it's the day after the race.
Yeah. So during the season of the Amazing Race, we're doing special recaps during our time on the race. But this is special because Sherry and Akbar Cook are pretty amazing people, and they have such an inspiring story to tell. Sherry and Akbar Cook are married educators from New Jersey. Akbar has a new book available now called Focus on the Love. We're going to talk about that. I think the most inspiring thing they've done is they created this program called Lights On at their school, and it's received national attention. Like, Oprah went to the school.
Right. One of the, if you watch The Amazing Race, like the first 3 minutes of the first episode of the show, there's a picture of Akbar in his school, and Oprah's holding his hand. So Kim's like, okay, that's something I've only dreamed of. But he's tight with Oprah. He's tight with Ellen. There's a reason why he's tight with all of these incredibly influential people, because the basic concept of what he did, it's this kind of simple idea that no one thought of, that took a sacrifice from him and from his family and his wife, but has changed the lives of this school community. And it also has kind of caught on in other school communities. Of course, no one will be able to talk about it as well as Akbar.
Exactly. So, and his book, Focus on the Love, A Transformative Approach to Organizational Leadership, is out now. It was released as of yesterday. So we're going to talk about what it means to be a leader, what it means to be a teacher right now, and what parents need to know about what educators are going through. It's going to be a good one, guys.
We'll talk a little bit about the race as well.
A little bit.
So Akbar and I got to be good friends. I do want to talk a little bit about it because I saw a side of him that potentially other people did not see
when
they watched it. So he and his wife are lovely people, and they obviously have been both a big part of the Lights On program, which you can see if you look at any of the stuff online when you're looking at Akbar and Sherry.
So welcome Akbar and Sherry Cook.
Welcome, Sherry and Akbar. It is so good to see your smiling faces.
We miss you.
We miss you guys, too.
Yeah, I miss my sports center buddy over there. Yeah.
All right, we talked about this in the intro. I think we should just, let's lead off with this.
Okay, go for it.
Akbar knows basketball. He played basketball in college. So did Sherry. We were on a race where there was we were in country after country that were not touristy countries, okay? Which means they didn't have any English-speaking television anywhere. There was no sports center. Whatever sports you wanted to find, it was not anything I'd ever heard of before.
We watched competitive rock climbing one night,
though. We watched competitive rock climbing in Switzerland. Oh, and so the time that Akbar and I did have together, which was usually on airplanes going from country to country, also no TV. And there were long 3-hour lines to get out of these countries. And we would just start talking sports. And we would ignore everybody for, 4 or 5 hours?
So boring.
Something like that.
And I'd be like, oh, wow, they're still talking about sports. I'm going to go back over here and talk to Sherry.
You guys talk about, yeah, they're doing strategy, and Akbar and I are having a definitive argument about Michael Jordan versus LeBron James, which I think we've settled. We're not going to bring that up again.
Oh, gosh.
We're good here. We're good.
Okay.
We argue about that all day.
So why did you guys want to do The Amazing Race?
Well, so when they contacted me, I was like, wow. One, I heard of the race before, but I didn't know what it consisted of. Uh-huh. And I was just like, well, it beats American Ninja Warrior, because American Ninja Warrior had called me before, and I knew I didn't want to be a meme for that. That was first, right? So then I asked them, the producers, I said, well, can I bring my brother-in-law or can I bring my son? And they was like, I don't think so. We don't know about that demographic. So I asked Sherry. And I thought she would say no, because she's scared of heights and she doesn't like to eat all these crazy things and she can't swim. And believe it or not, guys, she said yes. So I was like, okay. And when they met her, it was love at first sight, because they just was in love with her. And then I was, you know.
You were chopped liver.
Chemistry.
Yeah.
But I was actually all for Akbar taking my brother, because I figured, okay, one of us will still be here with the kids. So just go ahead and go with the Garian. So I guess he told them that he wanted to do that, and they were like, no, we're looking for the husband and the wife dynamic. So, I mean, I went against everything that I fear, and I said, okay, let's give it a try. So
I can relate to that, because this puts you so far out of your comfort zone. It was scary. What I mean, I was scared doing it.
It was definitely scary. It was heights is one of my biggest fears. But I said, if I'm going to go in the race, I may as well, you know, get ready and get over it. So I gave it a good go. I did the best I could.
You did not only the best you could. I mean, I think like everybody was standing up in their living rooms cheering for you when you did that bungee jump. That was just that. What is like the highlight of stuff I've done, that was like the highlight of the season for me, is seeing, cause you were like, I can't. And you just did it.
For those of you who have not watched the race, I just need to clarify this. It's the largest,
second largest
or deepest bungee jump. And it's gotta be the scariest, because it's off of a dam and you are parallel to the dam as you were jumping 700 and something feet.
722.
700. Yeah, you know exactly how many feet. I hear you, girl. 722 feet. And this was a couple of days after Sherry and had to climb up and down
a mountain,
a goat path in the middle of Switzerland. So Switzerland was something else for Sherry. Anyway, Sherry and Kim are now kindred spirits, because they both did this crazy jump. And if you want to see what it looks like, look at the first 5 minutes of the movie GoldenEye.
Yeah.
Have you guys watched that yet?
No.
I've seen GoldenEye, but yeah, that's the dam we jumped off.
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Yes.
Really?
Your wife did that.
Oh, wow.
So again, we're not going to keep this all Amazing Race, but what would you guys say was the hardest part of the experience? Could be a challenge, could be something we didn't see. What do you think?
I know the hardest part for me was probably the conditioning, just the running from place to place. That was a little bit difficult for me. And then the altitude, definitely, when we were on the mountain, was definitely so hard for me. I just remember gasping for breath and trying to breathe. So that was definitely difficult. That was the most difficult part that I can remember for myself, even outside of the steps.
Mm-hmm. Oh, those steps. What about you, Akbar?
For me, it would be the driving the first time around. Definitely the driving the first time around. Yeah, I know you pointed to that guy over there. But the driving the first time around was definitely huge. But it also was me trying to navigate between the competitor and the husband. You know, like, because we play cards, we play Monopoly. Like, you guys got to see them. It's like cutthroat Monopoly over here, but they all gang up on me. So it was kind of hard. And I think America got to see, you know, what would be considered abrasive you know, us going back and forth. But, you know, this is our dynamic. We've been together for 23 years and this is what we do. So that was the hard part for me. The hard part was the driving the first time around and just our communication because of my competitive nature.
Akbar, talk a little bit more about that. I mean, you mentioned abrasive. I also know you and I know Sherry, and there are different ways that people communicate, right? How different was the way you guys communicated from how you communicate in daily life, or was it the same?
I would want to say we're not competing most time of the day, but I think when sure. we do compete, yeah. So say we get on a video game as a family and we all like, that's how we all like, oh, let's go. Like, come on. Like, so it's like, you guys got to see the competitive part, but us in our normal daily life is not, that's that type of conversation is not going on. But it kind of, just watching it back, you know, it kind of made me more reflective. And I'm like, wow, you know, am I doing it at work too? Like, am I the bad boss?
Can I tell you something? Can I tell you something real quick? We've worked together now for 8 years. And the first year that we worked together, I was coming straight off of a job at a newsroom. And a newsroom is a lot like you're describing it. It's abrasive. That's the perfect term for it. And Kim worked in them for a long time. And we talked to each other in certain ways. And I came and did the job with Kim and I kept talking that way. And she's like, you're not talking to me right. And I said, no, this is how I normally do when I work. And she recorded me.
I recorded a conversation.
And I played it back and I did not recognize myself. This was 7 years ago. I didn't realize I was doing it. So I wonder if, I mean, what you just said reminded me of that, because, I mean, you got recorded and you said that it had you reflecting. It also had me reflecting as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's I didn't want to come across as the, you know, because everything I do is based on love. And I know, obviously, I love my family and everything that we do. And it kind of sent the wrong message out. I knew we would be, you know, I know we had the fireworks that, you know, reality TV likes. I knew that going in. That's just our dynamic. But I didn't want it to be like I was taking tack or trying to take advantage of her because, you know, I'm just big. Well, you know what I'm saying.
I know Sherry well enough to know that she's not going to be taken advantage of.
And I know I tell my kids all the time, don't say shut up. That's so ugly. Those are so ugly. But I must have said shut up maybe like 1,000 times to Akbar.
Or they looped
it. So he was like, you said you weren't going to say shut up anymore. I was like, I lied.
Well, that race does things to people.
It does things. It plays mind tricks. I will say that when I taped that phone conversation, we went into marriage counseling after that. So I will say we had the advantage of having marriage counseling before going on a reality show, but it does things to you. And you guys, you've been married for 23 years. Is that right? 23 years?
We've been married for 19 years, but we've been together for 23 years.
Okay. Well, that's not an accident, right? Like everybody communicates in a different way. Like something's working. Something's okay. Yes. You know what I mean? So
We don't talk to each other like that in our everyday lives. So
I couldn't imagine.
Shut up, though. She still says that.
I do not.
Listen, I people aren't able to see this. This is an audio podcast, but I love the way that you guys non-verbally communicate with each other. And I mean, you guys are in love. It's pretty darn obvious. And I'm sure that love is a big part of, you know, the reason why you were on the show, the reason why that you guys have given so much of yourselves to your community and have really like transformed not only your area, but a lot of schools in need. So, I mean, I'd love to segue into that because it really is, that is a labor of your love and it's something that you should be really proud of.
Yes. Thank you. So Penn and Kim, when I got the news I was going to Westside, I was kind of scared. It was one of the worst schools, you know, in the state, in the country. And I knew the only way we could do it is being consistent, being fair, and just do it with love. That year, not going too deep into it, I ended up losing 3 kids to gun violence. Mm-hmm. And I remember that first time I was there, it was just like I was just this helpless, this bystander as my kids were being picked off like a scary movie. So the following year, I decided that we were going to do something that mirrors a Boys and Girls Club and just open up the school from 6 p.m. to 11 p.m. Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays in the summer. And we would call it Lights On because all of the lights on in all the buildings across the, you know, across the world. I don't know why. But I knew I had to do it with my family. So nepotism at its finest. I got my sister and Sherry in the kitchen serving them some of the best food. I got my mom helping, you know, help out with the folks with our homes, and then washing the clothes with the kids. I got my son, you know, helping with the studio. I got, you know, just a lot of my kids working that used to be there with me. So it's like a family affair. But we started doing that, I want to say, in 2016. It was 2016. Mm-hmm. Prior to COVID, since we started doing that, we didn't lose any more kids to gun violence. And because we was consistent, we was fair, we was just giving them things. It's a place to be. And it just really caught fire. And that's what ended up getting us, you know, recognized on a lot of just local television. But it wasn't until the, you know, the Laundromat came out. And that's when, you know, we made his way to Ellen and then all the other great things that happened, like Oprah coming in and giving us $500,000.
I mean, so talk to us about the Laundromat for people that don't know, and how that has impacted the community.
So I was having a lot of students stay home, and I after, you know, digging further into it, I found out that they were staying home because they didn't have clean clothes. Like, and my district is one of those districts that require uniforms. Mm-hmm. So my thing is, you take the most disadvantaged youth and you tell them to wear uniforms. And then one of the uniforms is khakis. I'm like, why would you give them khakis? Khakis get dirty looking at them.
Yeah.
Right. So I changed the colors. I said, I went with black, you know, pants. I went with, you know, dark gray, dark color shirts, but it was still a Band-Aid. Came in and took one of my kids, fighting for their pride at the door, and come to find out, we went through a bag and she was just fighting because she was homeless and didn't want people to see her dirty underwear. So I got with my district and we put a laundromat in there. And now I can say my attendance is up. I'm over 90-something% attendance, and my kids never have to worry about laundry detergent or having to wash their clothes because we provided that, you know, that for them now.
That's incredible leadership. I think there's, I mean, teachers and administrators are up against so much, but just like whittling down to the core. So I applaud you for that.
Can you paint a little bit of a picture, maybe a little bit of the before picture? You talked about it a bit of how you were scared when you wanted to go to Westside, and hearing someone like you, who is a mountain of a man, saying he is scared, is quite a statement. You mentioned losing three kids to gun violence. I mean, can you just talk a little bit more specifically about those earlier days and what the climate was like?
Yes. So prior to us moving to Westside, I wanted to go up there. I was at another school called North Vocational. We dealt with career technical education, whether it was graphic arts, it was whether it was construction, culinary. So we had that, you know, system for our school. And we had another school that was dealing with early college classes. So the thing was, they wanted to take the early college courses and the career technical education and throw it in Westside and jumpstart it back into what it is today. Right? It sounds good on paper, but it wasn't the case. I go up there, Kim and Penn, to go see the lay of the land before we were supposed to go up there, and it was bad. You could smell weed in the hallways, cussing, kids in the hallways like as if it was a mall. Kids just not even in classes. It was crazy. I'm here cursing. So one little girl just was just tearing the whole place up, and I'm looking like, y'all not going to do nothing? Y'all not going to say nothing? They was looking like they was just a mascot. Like, this just goes on. Mm-hmm. When we first got to the school, I want to say about 2 weeks before school started, that little baby girl that I just mentioned was missing. And the missing went on for a couple of weeks. So opened up school. They said they found her in an abandoned building. Mm-hmm. She was, and I don't want to get too graphic, but she was decomposed so bad they didn't know, they couldn't even make her out. So I opened up in mourning, y'all. And I had no idea, like, I just never knew that kids were dying, mm-hmm. let alone in my school. So I don't know these kids. They don't know me. We're dealing with death. So now I'm looking for help. I'm looking for guidance. Like, I don't know all of the gangs here. So I had to reach out to some of the OGs that's around and, like, help me sift it. Like, I need to figure out what's going on. Like, I don't know who's warring with who. It wasn't even about school no more, guys. It was literally life trying to figure out who's a friendly and who's not.
Yeah.
So we get the lay of the land now. I had to kick some kids out, guys. I had to. Like, some kids were close to graduation and some just was there for the heck of it. So I had to sift through that. And we still gave them opportunities to get a GED and things of that nature. And I'm trying to go fast because I don't want to.
No, you're fine. Take your time.
So we had to make a decision. I had some kids that were close to graduation and some were not. So I had to kick out the kids that were not there to graduate. But I gave them alternative options to get their GED and things of that nature. So now we got that rolling. They kidnapped one of my boys.
Mm.
one of your boys, like one of your like
students,
your son or one of your boys, or
No, they kidnapped one of, you know, I call my kids at the school my babies.
Gotcha. Yep. I got gotcha.
They kidnapped one of my students at the school, and I apparently or allegedly he was the connect for all of the good drugs. Well, he knew where to get them from. When he didn't give them up his sources, they killed him and threw his body in his neighborhood. So the last people he was seen with, that started a whole nother like war in the building, because it was kids from the school and it was all of this. So it was shootouts and all these things in Newark. We go into the summer that year, guys. And when I say I felt helpless, it was like everything that was happening in the West Ward, either my kids were doing it or was happening to them. We get back to the school year now. We done righted the ship. I got better teachers in there. They know we there. We're not leaving them. We're good. I had this one kid. He was the most, I want to say, gangster in parentheses kid I've ever had. I'm talking about ankle bracelet. I'm talking about somebody you would not want to see at night if you didn't know him. Like, literally, it can go down. And he had this most infectious smile. It was like, I'm like, but the cops are coming here for you every day, man. What's going on? He said, Cook, man, I don't care about none of that. He said, my mama is going to see me walk across the stage. And I felt that. And I was like, all right. 2 weeks before graduation, he got killed in a drive-by shoot. That was three. So I had to come up with something. And that's why I said we came up with the Lights On program. Because it was just like, I'm just going to sit back and just keep watching my kids die. You know, like, we talk about going undefeated a lot. Like, now, where I'm at and where Sherry teaches at, if you're going undefeated, that's awesome. But if you lose, you could lose a kid's life. So that's why the Lights On is so vital to what we're doing. And like I said, we averaging about 250 to 350 kids every night. We feeding more. So it's just been a pillar. Well, I call it the oasis of, you know, in the land of despair in my city. And it's catching on in other cities now.
So how did the program have to pivot during COVID?
That was a whole nother beast. We actually had to stop for a while. And then Akbar, his wheel started turning and he started thinking of ways that we could get back into the building and still be safe at the same time. At one point, we were in the parking lot giving out meals and giving out fresh produce because we couldn't be in the building. So he arranged for us to be in the parking lot and families would come get food that way.
So let me chime in and I'm going to let you finish. Mm-hmm. So what made me think of this, it was around Memorial Day. The Salvation Army and Jersey Cares had reached out to me and they said, Cook, they said, we have a truckload, 1,500 boxes of fresh produce with nowhere to give it to. It's like, can you figure something out? And mind you, this is when we were still shut down, y'all. Mm-hmm. So I'm like 1,500 boxes on Memorial Day.
Yeah.
I was like, all right, we'll figure it out. We had 700 people come out and take all 1,500 boxes. That let me know and my team know. And they're so brave because I was still in a bubble. You guys know I have asthma.
Yeah.
So it took Sherry and my other staff to go out and do what she said they was doing. But that's what sparked it, guys. It was knowing that so many people were going without, that they would come out on a national holiday and still come out and get food. So
they needed it. Yeah. So
that was during COVID. So when we were actually able to go back into the building, it was a whole different dynamic because where we had high school students before, now we still have those families that were coming during the pandemic. They know about us now and they know that we're there. So now we have the students coming back and we still have those families to this day that still come on Friday nights to get meals for their families for the week sometimes. So we were able to get through it. And
so what does it look like? What does it look like? So Sherry and my sister, they cook meals. They cook enough meals of almost 400 people to go. So if a family of four comes up and say, we got eight kids at home, we will give them enough to-go boxes and we'll still give them the fresh produce and the dry goods to go home. So they get a meal that night and enough food for the weekend. Mm-hmm. And when we were in COVID, the brave men and women were coming to give them enough food for the night on Monday. And then they have enough food for Tuesday. They come again on Wednesday, get enough food for the night, and have enough food for Thursday. And we kept doing that all the way up until the summer ended, and we got able to go back into the building. But it, like I said, it took Sherry and them. I was scared to go around anybody at the time, guys.
Because it was so new, and we didn't really know what was going on with COVID. And Ott has really bad asthma. I really didn't want to see him out there anyway. So I just took the reins and tried to keep it going while he was inside. So
good for you. So you were saying, has this caught on in other schools? Because you hear about, I mean, the schools have so much on their plates right now. But your situation, I mean, it's not.
There's common sense stuff in there that I'm sure someone's like, oh, a laundromat.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, an after hours program.
Yeah. Has this caught on in other places?
Yes, I'm so happy about it, guys. It did catch on. And it took, you know, they say principalship is a lonely profession. Mm-hmm. And when the world shut down, we were very lonely. We didn't know what to do. Like, education took a hit. You guys know you have young mm-hmm. children.
Yeah.
It was hard on everyone. And my mentor, Dennis McKenzie, he used to be at the Harlem Children's Zone with Jeffrey Canada when they was doing all of that amazing stuff there. He was mentoring principals, and he just put us all on a Zoom like every Thursday at 4 o'clock. And we just got to vent, talk about best practices and what we were all doing just to stay afloat. And it took those folks to believe in what I was doing over here. And they allowed me to bring the Lights On program to 12 schools in New York City. Once we started doing it in New York City, then I went out, I got 2 schools in Vegas. I have 2 in LA. We're going to the Virgin Islands and we're going to Cameroon in April. So.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and Talkspace, the leading virtual therapy provider, is encouraging people to talk it out in therapy.
Opening up to a therapist might feel uncomfortable, cathartic, exhausting, or even exhilarating. But one thing's for certain, if you keep talking or texting with a licensed therapist, you will gain insights and uncover truths that you can only find in therapy.
Get those personal breakthroughs and judgment-free support by signing up for Talkspace.
At Talkspace.com, you can sign up online and get a personalized match with a provider that's right for you, typically within 48 hours.
There's no need to commute to appointments, miss time at work, or line up childcare in order to attend sessions. It's mental health care made easy.
Talkspace is also affordable and in-network with most major insurers.
To celebrate May, Mental Health Awareness Month, and the power of talking it out in therapy, Talkspace is offering every listener of this podcast $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com/Holderness.
To match with a licensed therapist today, go to Talkspace.com/Holderness to get $80 off your first month with code SPACE80. And to show your support for the show.
That's Talkspace.com/Holderness with code SPACE80.
Akbar and Sherry, tell me about your philosophy on hope. Because it seems like you guys have created hope where there was none before. And I can't imagine how powerful that is in a community.
Yeah, I would say it's hope. I just, again, back to Maslow, like they want the kids to learn. But they smell bad, or they didn't eat, or they got to take care of their siblings, or you know, or they have to judge between, well, not judge, but choose between a job or going to school now. Like, all of these things that play a part in what decisions these kids are making. And I'm just trying to just remove the barriers so they can just be kids again. That's the problem. That's what Lights On was about. Let kids be kids. Just run around and not worry about, you know, somebody trying to rob you or, you know, whether you're going to eat. So it's just getting back to that, man. Kids need to be kids. We're making them grow up so fast with these telephones and social media. So Lights On was supposed to be just that guiding light.
I'm so glad it's taken on, and I know you're saving lives out there. Sherry, you're a teacher, you're in the classroom, and I know that during COVID, I saw what our teachers had to do, and I would mistakenly say like, oh, we're homeschooling. We're not homeschooling. We literally just sat our kids in front of their computers and the teachers did all the work. What do you wish parents knew about education right now? Like what do you wish they knew?
I wish parents, and I think that is catching on more so now, knew that they play a major role in the education of their children. They are their children's first teachers, and you don't just stop teaching them when they go into a school building. You still teach them at home, you read with them, you know, you teach them maybe some things that they didn't pick up in the classroom. You just make sure that, you know, and you talk to them about school and you talk to them about their day. It's not just, you know, books, books, books all the time. Mm-hmm. In the world that we're living in now, we have to make sure that they're social and emotional, that that's been taken care of as well. We want them to learn, but we also want them to be successful adults, well-rounded adults. So that I want them to know that education is important, but we have to look at the child as a whole. We have to take into consideration that they're going through everything that we're going through as adults, maybe even more because they're young. They don't, they don't know how to deal with the world like adults know how to deal with the world. And just to be there for them, just to be there for them. It's not all about those A's and B's. You want to make sure that you're taking care of their social and emotional well-being as well.
Can I add something, guys?
Yeah, please.
So what everyone has to realize is that, let's take Sherry, for instance. Sherry is a second grade teacher, right?
Yes.
Second grade teacher. The children that she has have not been in a classroom since kindergarten. Yeah. Think about that. So you're taking a baby.
And they were only there for half a year.
Yeah.
So you're taking that baby and you're trying to expose them to second grade work when some of the babies don't even know how to spell a name and they're supposed to be writing sentences. I want you to think about that. Now think about me in high school. I have a 10th grader that has not been in school since 8th grade.
Yeah.
And now I'm putting him around 17 and 18 year olds. Mm. So schools are going through it more so that way, but also with the learning loss. But we got to think about the social aspect that she keeps talking about. Like, you don't know how to be so, like, an eighth grader does not know how to socialize with a 12th grader. You just don't. Mm-hmm. You know, so I got the boys, I make a joke with them all the time. They're running, hitting the girls, and they're running away. I'm like, boy, if you don't stop doing that, that's not high school, you know?
I even with our own children, I think that, I mean, my daughter's now a freshman. But she really, this is her first year since seventh grade. And now she's in this huge high school. And I think that it's so overwhelming for our kids right now, even in the best of circumstances. So like in the best of circumstances.
We're going through, I think everyone goes through it at whatever age it is. They're in it. Akbar, you're 100% right. It's the social part. Like our kids went through it as well.
Yeah.
And
they're still struggling with it.
We saw real sadness. And just kind of sadness comes from confusion and not really knowing what to do and how to do it. I mean, we've been very fortunate that, you know, our kids are back in school and I mean, they're getting there. You still can't tell if somebody's smiling though. I mean, there's so many things that we've got to repair. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's probably a good thing that your book is going to get passed around pretty soon.
Yes. Let's talk about Focus on the Love, a transformative approach to organizational leadership.
It's a fancy title, Akbar.
It is a fancy title, Akbar. Tell us about this book. Where'd it come from?
Y'all segues are amazing.
We're amazing. That's all, like, honestly, we were news reporters. We are so freaking cringy with our segues.
So bad.
Oh, my God. Y'all badass. But I wanted to call the book Leading with Love, right? And it's more like a how-to manual. I just wanted to tell folks, like, listen, one, all of these things, these ideas I come up with, they're not my ideas. They're from people around me, mainly my kids. But if you just listen and you do everything with love, great things happen. Like when I choose a staff, like I just told you, these people put themselves at risk to hold me and the Lights On program down. I mean, in the city, like literally, that was love. They I made them, you know, stakeholders in it. So the book is about transformative leadership, man. Organizational leadership. It's just about, if you're the Fortune 500 CEO down to the head of the custodians, like if you just run your team like you would run your family, like think about it. You got little children. I got children. If you ran your business like you want your babies to do in real life and do better than you, how could you lose? So it's just basically a how-to manual, how to run your organization. It's just quotes. It's just things that I hope motivate folks. But I only have one story in there, guys. I got one story. It's from one of my kids, Alfonso Anderson. Alfonso Anderson played basketball for me, and I knew this kid would die if he stayed here. So I shipped Alfonso Anderson off to the other part of the United States. I sent him to Cheyenne, Wyoming.
Whoa.
To a junior college out there. And he was on a full scholarship. And Penn, I know you know this. In order to play Division I basketball, you need to graduate from a junior college.
Yes.
Right? So he only had 48 credits, and he could go play NIA or Division II, but it was his dream. So he was about to go home, guys. And that school loved that boy so much, they gave him another free year. And he graduated with his associate's degree from there. Right now, he's at a historically black college in Oklahoma City, and he's still doing his thing. So that's me. I put that story in to show you that if I would have just did the bare minimum like most people do and just level up on his kid, he would have been home and probably dead or in jail right now. Mm-hmm. And that's what this book is about. It's just literally going beyond, you know, finding people that match your fly. That's one of the keywords. Match your fly, meaning match my intensity, my work ethic, my love for what I do. And again, good things will happen. So without me being all preachy, but that's what the book is about.
No, I love what you said about like finding you want people like in my, I want my kids to do better than I do. I want my kids to do better. And I think leading an organization, taking your teacher, your staff, whatever it is, and you want them to surpass you. Like you want them to do better than you do.
Yeah.
The same way you do in your family. I think that's a great way to look at it.
Also, Akbar, we went through the same thing when we wrote our book. It's called imposter syndrome. And we always feel like we have to qualify everything with like, this isn't me. This is stuff that's all out there that we have discovered. And you don't want to, and you said, I don't want to sound preachy. We do the same thing when we talk about our book. I will say this, from your stories and everything you've told, no one has a perspective as unique as yours.
Right.
So you should own it.
Yeah.
Because it is yours.
Totally.
Well, I thank you guys. And I thank you guys for everything that you do. You guys are so inspirational. We love you are Kim. You are.
Oh my God. You are.
Yo, I did y'all sign copies today, and I just was trying to find the right words to say to you both. You guys just pushed us. You was always there. We needed you. And even now, like you guys, it's like when I say influential, like if you guys like something, the whole world likes it with you. I'm just like, you guys are so.
I mean, we're not Ellen, but we'll take it.
And I was like, are they like that in person? Really? Do they? They're funny and they're nice.
We are cringy in person as well.
But I've always been cringy. Like, come on. I'm fine with it. Just I'm leaning into it.
So, okay, hold on, Akbar, real quick. So, and then we're going to let you go.
Yeah.
But so what do you think is missing? So this is all about like leadership and organization and all that and your family. But what do you think leaders in companies and schools and families are missing that we're not doing right?
I have to start from the school's perspective, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think as educators, we taught the backwards plan, right? So the ultimate goal is to get to a living wage. I don't think America has figured that out yet. I thought that with this halt in education, we could address it, but it's not there. If the ultimate goal is a living wage, what are we doing to set every kid up to be successful? I mean, we have individual education plans, IEPs for certain students, but it should be individual learning plans for everybody. Find out what they're passionate about, what's already genius in them, and build on it. I mean, I don't know if you guys read The Giver, but in The Giver, they had a society where they started earmarking these kids for all of this stuff when they was like almost 3 years, you know, from the womb to they got to a certain age. And I think we need to do that. Like we just keep throwing every kid at college, and college is not the cure all be all for everyone. So I just think we need to reverse engineer what is the ultimate goal. And we need to figure out how to get everyone there. Not just the top half. There's not just my nerds, and I can call them nerds because I'm a principal. What bigger nerd is that? Right.
Hey, we're nerds. It's fine. Not insulted.
but also the kid at the back of the room that this traditional education is not impacting. So I had to start from there, guys.
By the way, funny story, the time that we spent most together, us and the cooks, was in Switzerland, which has figured out a living wage. I don't know. Like, we were talking to one of the car drivers there, and he was telling us all about how the government is set up, and it's interesting.
Well, I mean, there's a bigger problem that, like, you can go to work in a restaurant and still qualify for government assistance. Like, the living wage,
it's a whole other thing.
It's a whole other podcast.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree that I don't personally agree that we preach, like, if you don't go to college, you have failed. Like, I don't think college is for everybody. And I think that, like you were saying, there's a special genius inside everybody. And I think this, like, one track, like, you go to college or you don't thing that I think is preached a lot is bad. So we could talk forever, but I am proud of you and publishing this book. I'm so excited to read it.
I can't wait till you guys read it. It should be there before Valentine's Day. Just letting you guys know that.
Okay.
So, when is that again? We've been together long enough that I do not. What day?
February 14th.
I know what day it is, but what day of the week is it?
It's Monday.
Monday. Thank you, Rob.
And because we live in, like, a weird space-time continuum, this is actually coming out Tuesday.
Right. So I will have either screwed up Valentine's Day or done a great job by the time you listen to this.
I mean, you don't know. I mean, do you guys do Valentine's Day? You've been married for a long time. Do you do Valentine's Day?
No. My son has an 8 o'clock game on Valentine's Day.
I feel like our weekends.
I'm in the gym.
Yeah, our weekends, our weeknights are just youth sports.
We're in that season, you guys. Like, our son just, like, he's trying out for AAU. Our daughter is going to USTA tournaments. Like, we are.
I mean, nobody told me about that stage in parenting, which is just the youth sports.
That's
stage
all it is.
Of parenting.
Oh yeah.
I mean,
always on the run. Go, go, go.
I know. Anyway.
Okay, we're gonna let you guys go.
We love you. It was so great to see them and talk to them.
Yes, I love them. I've never heard Akbar's story in that much detail before. Mm-hmm. I assumed that it was bad. Every time he talks, he says it was bad, and then you hear what it's really like. And I can't even imagine that level of bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know why I can't imagine it? Because I've never encountered anything anywhere close to it. I mean, I grew up in a city that had some trouble, but I've never heard anything like that before. And it just shows the character that both of them have.
And the hope they have and the work ethic they have to not give up on. I think we live in this bubble. We all do, right? And it's easy just to kind of put the blinders on and not see what's happening in your own community. So they're inspiring and I love them. And we will put the link to his book, because that's a way to support them, mm-hmm. in all the show notes and all that stuff. And
thank you so much for listening. I know there was a little bit of Amazing Race stuff there at the beginning, but it really is. It is a unique experience that we went through. And now you can hear how we kind of go through it with other people and other married couples.
Yeah.
And no one gets out of this thing unscathed.
Right.
And so it affects all of us. But really what it did was gave us the opportunity to meet people with so many different backgrounds. And there's no better example than those two. And I miss them.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more.
and is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.